how the Titans will approach Andrew Luck on Sunday night, why Baker Mayfield and the Browns have a great shot to spoil the Ravens season, and a look at the Vikings' do-or-die matchup with the Bears. Plus, mailbag questions on the Patriots offense and what went wrong with the Lions this year. It's all on the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Deep Dive Podcast. I am Gary Gramlin. He is Andy Benoit. We hope you all had a wonderful Christmas. We have three games heavy with playoff implications to break down for Week 17. Andy, this is going to be... I'm kind of glad that Sunday Night Flex game is back. I kind of missed it last year because you,
like
me...
Did they not flex last year? I thought
there was no flex. Nope, no flex last year because it was New Year's Eve.
Oh, that's
you and I...
That's right.
As all people should, do not celebrate New Year's Eve.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the reason for the All-Pro vote comes out the day after New Year's, so I wind up spending New Year's Eve going through my film notes all night, which I kind of enjoy. I do like it. That's how I like to end the year. So, yeah, I'm not a big New Year's Eve guy. It's consistently a letdown. I've never had a New Year's go better than I expected it to go. Not even close.
Yeah, I think I've had two in my life.
And I bet that's true of everybody, of 95% of people. And if it's not true for you, I want to know how you did it.
The one really good year I had in my adulthood was when one of my friends was moving out of his apartment and they were completely gutting the building. So he had permission to completely smash his apartment. So there were just a bunch of, like, sledgehammers and stuff. And this is probably a terrible idea to have a bunch of drunk and otherwise inebriated people with sort of weapons of destruction. But, yeah, we kind of bashed up his apartment and we drank and it was good. It was a good time. That was a good New Year's. That was about it.
Remember 2006. Remember Rex Grossman for the Bears laid an egg in a what for them was a meaningless Week 17 game against, I think it's the Packers, and we thought it was Brett Favre's last game for the first of a dozen years in a row.
Yep.
And Grossman admitted afterwards that, well, you know, it's we already have our playoff spot locked up, and New Year's was kind of on my mind, and how unbelievably raked over the coals he got for admitting that and saying that he was thinking about the New Year's party after the game. Think about it during the game. It was waiting for him after the game. Yeah.
Yep.
I think about that every year, and I think don't be Rex Grossman, because you get to the finish here, and I'm going to wind up watching Jets-Packers film later this week, and I'm going to want to not do it. And I really do. The end of the season, I think don't be Rex Grossman, who wound up going to the Super Bowl that year anyway still.
I was going to say, that kind of worked out for him. I don't know.
Yeah, kind of.
Sort of. Well, let's dive into the Week 17 slate here. We're going to break down three games. Only two of them involve games where both teams have playoff implications on the line, whether it be in or out or seeding. But we're starting with the flex game, the Sunday night game, the Colts and the Titans. This game was a little bit weird. Their first go around in Indianapolis. This is when Dean Pease had some sort of medical emergency before the game, and not to put it all on that. The Colts obviously are playing very well, but the Colts just sort of blew the doors off the Titans once the second quarter began. But I don't know, this Titans team, everyone has sort of been writing off all year. We'll see. Mariota says he's optimistic he'll be able to go, but offensively, what do they do at this point besides just hand the ball to Derrick Henry and hope they just wear down another defense?
Well, they have some pretty carved out staples in their offense, and honestly, I don't think it matters a whole lot who is that. And Mariota's the better player, but Blaine Gabbert, they can run their offense with him. What you get with Mariota that is important, it was important when they played last time against Indianapolis, is some of those second reaction plays. And Mariota, I think to his credit, has not become dependent on those. I think it's odd because I think he's at his best when he's making those sandlot second reaction plays, but you still can't be dependent on those. And I think to his credit, he's gotten a little bit more dedicated to running the offense as designed over the course of this season. He's still a little bit of a limited QB, and he's not a natural pocket mover or quick field reader all of the time. So what they do with a guy like that, the screen game is big. Vertical plays out of multi-tight end sets. They like to condense their formations and then spread you out from the and their route designs, much like the Rams will do. Three-level stretches, so one guy super deep, one guy kind of deep, and the other guy underneath. They've got a nice imprint offensively, and I think Matt LaFleur, their coordinator, who's learned on the fly this year, and you saw that a little bit early in the year, they've really found themselves the second half of the year, and he's done a lot more with a lot less than a lot of coordinators around the league have.
Yeah, it would be kind of nice to, not to get ahead of ourselves, but kind of be nice if he stuck around for a second year in Tennessee and see what they can build off of this. It was just such a strange year for the Titans. I've referred to their defensive injuries over the summer, put them behind the eight ball a little bit, but offensively losing Delanie Walker in the season opener there, they had a lot to overcome this year. Colts, I mean, look, we've talked a lot about the Colts, and rightfully so. They're red hot here. I don't know. The Titans know Logan Ryan. It hasn't seemed to make a big difference who the Colts have faced defensively as far as getting their passing game going. But I don't know. Is there any reason to think that Andrew Luck can't put up enough points on Sunday night?
The Titans have done a really good job schematically against veteran quarterbacks. One of their imprints is what's called a zone exchange, where it looks like a blitz, but you drop out you show five as a pass rush, but you only bring four. And one of those five guys drops out, or it's somebody who wasn't part of the five, a cornerback blitzing. They've done that a lot, but they still play a full seven-man coverage behind it, just exchanging guys. Rex Ryan was really good at it years ago with the Jets. That's what Dean Pease has done a lot with them. And when they stymied Tom Brady a few weeks ago, and then 2 weeks ago they really stymied Eli Manning, another smart, cerebral veteran QB, they did it with those zone exchanges. And what happens is they get different zone defenders dropping to different spots, and you kind of can predict the spots. They play cover two or cover three, but when you don't know what the cover, when you don't know who's going to drop, then it's still moving pieces, and you don't know how the guy's getting to that spot. So I think we're going to see a lot of that against Andrew Luck, because I bet Dean Pease would view Luck as in that Brady class of veteran QB. And the other thing is, if they play cover three on those zone exchanges, now you're crowding the underneath parts of the field a little bit, and that's a good way to take away the quick strike passing game that the Colts rely on.
This is the big one. Winner is in. Unless there's a tie, they could both miss out on the playoffs if there's a tie, I believe. If the Steelers win and the Ravens win and this one is a tie, I think they'd both be out. But basically, winner's going to be in for this one.
I would love to see it go down to the final minutes of overtime, though, like that.
If it went to deep overtime, would you? I guess they're rivals, so they don't like each other any more than they like the other teams. But would someone just fall on their sword, take a safety on the last play of overtime?
Well, so if that there's like 99, well, you wouldn't, but you would go. If it's 99 yards to go, you wouldn't obviously play for the tie. So it'd be fun to. I mean, you'd see.
Yeah,
but. You know, the other thing that shocked me when I heard this, this is highly unlikely, but this is not impossible. If the Ravens, Texans, and Patriots all lose and the Titans win, the Tennessee Titans will be the number two seed and have a bye week.
Oh, wow. That's a good point. Yeah. They are still in the running for the division here. And obviously the Patriots are not locked into the two yet.
The last time I can remember a team entering, and I think it was week 16 that they did it. Someone can check. This will be easy to check. It may have been week 17, but the Denver Broncos in 2015, when they won the Super Bowl, they entered the playoffs or the final playoff stretch run. Either they could have been out or they could have been the two seed. They had that wide of a range of landing spots late in the season. But I don't know who else has had such a wide range. I mean, if the Titans get the bye, that'd be the biggest upset and the biggest shock in week 17 that we've seen. Well, maybe since the Bills somehow got in last year. But
yeah.
It's highly unlikely, but I was shocked it's even a possibility.
I think that would be a bigger shocker than the Bills getting in. Because for that to happen, I mean, the Jets would have to win in New England, and the Jaguars would have to win in Houston. And who was the other one? The Browns would have to win in Baltimore. Those are three.
I think the Jets in New England's hard. Those other two, I don't think are
they're not
ridiculous.
Crazy.
No, the Jags have Jalen Ramsey who can match to Hopkins. That's a wild card for Houston. Now they have to win with someone else, perhaps.
Yep.
And Cleveland's – we're going to talk about Cleveland-Baltimore here in a second.
We are.
Playing very well.
We're going to talk about them right now, actually. I'm just going to point out to have those two games go the right way would still be – I mean, what? You're probably talking about like a 15% chance or something like that. And then to have that happen and the Jets win in New England would be – I think that's a bit much, Andy.
I have said all along that's a bit much.
It's going to be like a 2% or something like that. Browns-Ravens. Yes, let's talk about this one. In Baltimore, Ravens, if they win, they are the AFC North champions. Only way they would be out would be a loss, and then the Steelers win. Steelers are most likely going to beat the Bengals. Not definitely, but most likely so. Ravens, you know, it's up to them to win this game. Now, the interesting matchup in this one, I think to anyone, is Baker Mayfield and what this Ravens defense is going to be able to do to show him. I mean, this is by far the most complex, the most probably difficult defense to prepare for at this point. And you saw what they did to Phillip Rivers a week ago, and now mm-hmm. you got a rookie quarterback you're going against.
Yeah, Rivers left some throws on the field against Baltimore. One thing that the Ravens have done a few times this year, and they haven't paid the price, because we talk about those fire zone coverages where it's three deep in zone, three underneath instead of four underneath. So it's a lighter zone, and you're blitzing from it. And in a lighter zone, you match up to somebody because otherwise the zone areas are too big to defend. They've had some issues at times matching up with vertical receivers, especially when you put those receivers on multiple releases together. So two guys running off the line of scrimmage together. Mm-hmm. And Rivers had a touchdown to Tyrell Williams last week that he just didn't see. That would have really changed the flow and tenor of that game. That came late in the first half. But there have been other times this year that's happened to Baltimore. I think Mayfield's a type that will – I'm not saying Mayfield reads the field better than Phillip Rivers, but Mayfield, I have been so impressed with the way he works through his progressions. I think if you have those issues in Baltimore, he will take advantage of it, especially because the Browns are so good on seam routes, and he's so good at throwing the seam routes, and that's usually where a fire zone will break down if it does break down.
The disguises he's going to see, because the Ravens do disguise as effectively and as frequently
yes.
and uniquely as anyone in the league. I mean, I just wonder about it because I think Baker Mayfield, from a processing and from a storage capacity standpoint, is he's among the best to have come into the league as a rookie in a very long time. So I don't think he's necessarily incapable of dealing with something like this, but I do wonder if he's a little bit incapable of dealing with it the first time he sees some of this stuff.
Well, he played Baltimore early this year, I believe, and he looked like a rookie at times in that game. He left some throws on the field he didn't quite get through. What we forget about with young players and all QBs, and this is what separates the Bradys and the Rivers of the world, is the ability to remove bad reads quickly, to isolate bad reads and get off of them and get onto the next read. And Mayfield was not good at that the first time he faced Baltimore, but he was brand new to the league. He's gotten very good at that now. Gary, I think what really matters, though, J.C. Treader at center for the Browns, and mm-hmm. then Zeitler and Betonio, those guards, how comfortable Mayfield feels with them, because a lot of what Baltimore does begins with stressing your interior offensive line, either mentally or last week we saw physically. They had some great
yeah.
blitzes against the Chargers have bad guards right now, but they had some great blitzes to beat Schofield and Feeney, those Charger guards. Browns have been very sturdy there. They were, for what it's worth, they were great in the run game in their interior line. They're not great at tackle. Greg Robinson, in fact, he struggles mentally quite a bit, so maybe the Ravens tweak some things to go after him. But it all starts with understanding Baltimore's interior pressure concepts, and if Mayfield's comfortable there, and he's got reason to be, then I think we'll see a competitive game here.
And let's talk real quick about this Browns defense, which has it's funny, we're the Browns are out of it. The Browns don't have anything to play for, but we're still going to talk about the Browns. They do have a chance to finish with a winning record here, and then the Greg Williams scenario, do you keep them? That becomes very interesting at that point. In this three-game winning streak, now granted, these aren't world beaters. They held the Panthers to 20. That was with a somewhat hampered Cam Newton. They held the Broncos to 16, and they held the Bengals to 18 a week ago. Are we seeing a defense on the rise, and are we seeing a defense that can it was still Joe Flacco the first time they played. Is this a defense that is fit? I mean, they're athletic in, at the linebacker spots. I don't know if they're necessarily disciplined at the linebacker spots to deal with the with really strict assignment football here.
You're thinking Jamie Collins. That's who you're talking
about. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about all of them, but especially Jamie Collins.
Yeah. They played really fast last week. They looked collectively fast, and that's usually a sign of everything coming together. Now, it was against an extremely limited Bengals offense, but these are still NFL offenses. You know how I feel about that, Gary. Mm-hmm. I'm high on the Browns defense. I'm very high on it, but Baltimore, they make you play a different style of defense, too. It comes down to your ability to stop the run. One thing we saw from the Browns last week, we saw it early in the game against Cincy, and they got away from it and came back to it in the fourth quarter, but it had a lot of success for them as a 5-1 front, and in this case, it'll be a 5-2 front most likely, because the Ravens will likely have two tight ends on the field instead of three receivers, but five guys down along the front. And when they do that, Myles Garrett plays defensive tackle, three technique. Mm-hmm. And I think that's his best position. Even though he's very good on the edges, I think he's more athletic than Clowney, another guy who plays on the edges, but I think it's better inside. But Myles Garrett, I love him at defensive tackle. I like the guys around him better in some of those other spots. Avery gets on there, Jannard Avery, Chris Smith, 5-2 fronts from the Browns, and then how do they stop the run against it, of course?
All right. What's your gut feeling? Because we've talked about Freddie Kitchens, and I think we both would like to see some scenario where Freddie Kitchens is the offensive coordinator in Cleveland next year. If the Browns were to finish this season on it would be a 6-1 run, does Greg Williams keep the job?
Oh.
What does your gut say? What does your heart say?
My gut says yes. How could he not keep the job? Unless John Dorsey, their GM, who I believe and I certainly hope is the guy fully in charge of this hiring process, and Jimmy Haslam just gets to meet the guy before he allows Dorsey to anoint him, whoever it is the new head coach. And Dorsey has a lot of networks and he's been in the league a long time. He's got previous relationships, previous stops and all that. You know, Mike McCarthy's a guy of his. So unless Dorsey is just absolutely sold on someone, I don't know how you could justify not keeping Williams in that post, given the way they'd finish. And I think the biggest one to me is the Freddie Kitchens one. I think you have to keep Freddie Kitchens in there. The Mayfield-Kitchens marriage has gone as well as any marriage I've seen over the first 6 to 8 games, however many it's been for these guys.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Oh boy, I'm trying to imagine a scenario. So let's play it out. They lose to Baltimore. I would like to see Greg Williams stay at this point. And I'm not a big Greg Williams guy, but I would like to see the staff that's in place right now, considering what they did. After he left, get a full off season and then a full season to see what they have here. My gut, just thinking about the politics of this, I think they're gonna go. I think they're gonna go get someone. I think they're gonna get some big name hire and do it that way.
Does it have to be a defensive guy who will keep Kitchens in place on the offensive side?
You'd like to think so.
Do we have a Ben McAdoo situation here or a Dirk Cutter situation?
You'd like to think so. And I mean, look, we obviously we're not in the building. We don't know exactly how they're getting along. The sense you get from Baker Mayfield, and I said this back during the draft process, I thought he had sort of a lot of people were throwing out Johnny Manziel. I didn't think he was anything like Manziel. I do think he's got a little bit of Jay Cutler in him in the he's incredibly intelligent, and if he thinks you are not on the same level as him, he does not have a whole lot of patience for you and a whole lot of respect for you. I think he's not I think his, you're not going to give him power to make a hire or anything or anything like that, but I think it's very important to get someone who's going to mesh well with him, and I think from what we've seen publicly, the sense is that he meshes very well with Freddie Kitchens, and those two really get along well, and I don't think you want to mess with that chemistry, because I think Mayfield might be the kind of guy who, you know, if you bring in the wrong guy, you've just really set things back significantly.
Kitchens is doing some really modern stuff. These jet sweeps, all the best offenses seem to do jet action now, whether they're handing it off or not. They do hand it off at times. They have Duke Johnson in that. Their spread empty game, which Mayfield's comfortable with. They're throwing out a multi-tight end sets. Kitchens, who has not called plays, I don't believe, he just gets where offenses are today. He's a step ahead of a lot of people.
Oh, that's going to be a really fascinating
I can't wait for this game. Yeah. This is the most anticipated. I know the Browns have nothing to play for. I think Cleveland, remember last year, Baltimore got beat by Cincinnati, who had nothing to play for in Baltimore, week 17. That would not shock me if that happens here. Even though the Ravens looked so good last week, especially on defensively, that's the best they've looked all season, even counting that Titans game where they sacked Mariota, 10 or 11 times? I think this will be a tough matchup. Also, last note, Gary, I'm taking over as host now, as you see here.
Yes.
Rashad Perriman, former Raven, has become a bona fide weapon in Cleveland's offense. He looks not quite like a first-round pick ought to look, a former pro, but he's got a place. He and Mayfield, Rashard Higgins at wide receiver and Rashad Perriman, those two guys have excellent chemistry with Mayfield.
Yeah. No, they've figured out how to use him. That's going to be a really interesting couple of weeks in Cleveland here. And like I said, I wish that had been the Sunday night flex game, but can't blame the NFL for going with the one that's meaningful to both teams. All right, let's do one more game here. The Bears go to Minnesota for week 17. The Bears have a chance to play their way into the two seed if who am I thinking of, Andy? Who's got to lose here? The Rams have to lose again.
The Rams
Yeah, that's what the scenario would be. So, you know, most likely they're a three seed, but and they can't go any lower than that. But if the Rams were to lose to the 49ers at home, the Bears could move up to the two seed. This Vikings team obviously has to win this one to solidify their spot. They need an Eagles loss if they lose to the Bears here. But when these teams met a couple weeks ago in Chicago, the Sunday night game, this sort of felt like the beginning of the end for John DeFilippo when I look at it. This was the game Dalvin Cook was back, and it was going to be, okay, this is when we're really going to get the run game going, and it just didn't happen. It didn't happen that way. Cook struggled. He lost a fumble. They never really got anything going. They never got the play action game going. They really didn't do anything until the end of the game, and they started going up tempo on this Bears defense, and then they put some points up and obviously fell short. But this Vikings offense, what they've done the last 2 weeks under Stefanski, I mean, does it give them more of a chance? Do you see anything different, or was it a matter of they just sort of they steamrolled a inconsistent Dolphins run defense, and then they just sort of outlasted a Lions team that can't put points on the board?
Well, yeah, and a Lions team that they could not run the ball against, and that's important to remember because Detroit's front is, or let's say Chicago's front, is similar to Detroit's. It's a lot more similar to Detroit than it would be to Miami, which does have a very inconsistent run defense. So Stefanski's under strict orders to run the ball. Let's assume that those orders are standing as the Vikings enter one of the most important games of their season. Can they run the ball? I'd be surprised if they can. The one thing you do get with Stefanski, what he likes to do in some of their zone run designs, he'll leave the furthest edge defender unblocked. So Leonard Floyd unblocked or Khalil Mack would be a great one to leave unblocked. You might do that and maybe skew some numbers in your favor, but in order for that to matter, your offensive linemen who are blocking people, they still have to win off the snap. They've got to move the line of scrimmage. Otherwise, that unblocked guy just comes right down there and tackles you for a 1 or 2 yard gain. I don't think they could move the line of scrimmage against Chicago. So it gets back to the passing game and Kirk Cousins and what they can do there. And we'll find out. The Lions and Bears are two very different pass defenses. One has a pass rush. They'll see that Sunday night. The Vikings will. The other, you and I could be pass rushers for them.
Yeah.
At least you could.
This is, I don't know. I got pretty bad knees and ankles at this spot, and I don't like to be touched.
Well,
so,
you'd play Ziggy Ansah's position then. That's mean. That's not polite.
That's, oh. I don't know. We're going to talk about the Lions in a little bit, by the way, too, so I can get some stuff off my chest. But the Bears offensively here, we talked about this on the Monday show. I was encouraged by Trubisky's second half in San Francisco, and you sort of said he was the throws he was asked to make are pretty elementary throws for an NFL quarterback. They didn't ask him to do a whole lot. He's struggled everywhere save for a couple of games that were blowouts. What do you do with him at this point if you're Matt Nagy? Because I would think you have to figure out some way to generate consistent offense going into January when you are potentially going to have to go play the Rams in LA and play the Saints in New Orleans.
Yes, you will. And it's going to have to be the running game, don't you think? And ball control, the running game, Tariq Cohen in the underneath passing game. Jordan Howard we haven't talked about him a whole lot this year for the Bears. He got going a little bit in that Niners game last week, too. And I know it's San Francisco. It's a different kind of deal. But I think that's illustrative of what they need to do. They're going to have to be a ball control offense because we know what the Bears do. They come out and they score on their first possession, the scripted plays, and then they just kind of tread water from there a lot of the times. If you're going to tread water proactively, I think running the ball opposite their defense in January, Chicago, they're going to get a home game in the playoffs. I think that's where the formula at least has to begin.
Well, they kind of – it's like you see flashes of Jordan Howard, and then they kind of move away from him so quickly. And is this a case of, Nagy's just so enamored with what you can do with Tariq Cohen and how creative you can get that he's sort of – not to criticize the guy, he's done a tremendous job this year, but are they moving away from Howard too frequently, too eagerly?
Well, maybe a little. Feels like he's played less this year. I think he actually played a little bit more of the snaps percentage-wise than he did last year under the previous regime. He just doesn't fit Nagy's offense the same way that some of these other guys do. He's not a horizontal player at all. He's a north and south player, which might make his contributions a little bit opponent-specific then. Do you feel you can get north and south on that week's opponent, and it comes down to who do they have in their front seven? I mean, it could be that. The nice thing is you can have those conversations because Cohen and Howard are so different, and they have packages where both guys are on the field too, for what that's worth. So we'll see. I don't know Matt Nagy's part of the problem here, but I have answering that question, Gary. I don't know if he believes that your short passing game is a version and an extension of your running game. I would imagine he does, having spent all that time with Andy Reid, but I don't know that for sure. It'd be interesting. Like Dave Filippo, go back to the Vikings side of this. The reason he's not employed by the Vikings is because he believes that you can substitute parts of your running game for a controlled passing game. And Mike Zimmer doesn't believe that. I would imagine Nagy believes what Dave Filippo believes, that you can do that. And if that's the case, that's why Jordan Howard's role feels so inconsistent from week to week.
All right. Well, certainly we will be talking about the Bears plenty the next couple of weeks as we head into the postseason. And perhaps we will be talking about the Vikings more, or perhaps this is our last Vikings conversation for a little while. And next time we'll talk about them, we'll talk about how disappointing it was they missed the playoffs. We'll see. Let's go to the mailbag. Let's get to two questions here. This first one's coming from Paul. If the Rams offense lays an egg in the playoffs, this could also apply to the Chiefs and Saints. How would you like the coach or coaches to respond in 2019? And part two of that, is there a trend of high-scoring offenses petering out late in the year, like the 2007 Patriots, 2013 Broncos, and 2012 Packers? I do want to, I don't want to get too far away from Paul's question, but I do want to talk about the Patriots a little bit here, and I think weather plays a role in some of these teams that you see, and they're not quite as explosive. I mean, those three teams cited right there, the 07 Patriots, the 13 Broncos, the 12 Packers, those are all cold weather teams. They played cold weather playoff games. Things change a little bit in the elements if you have to play in snow, wind, whatever it might be. But a team like the Patriots, and you wrote about them in your deep dive column this week, Andy, they seem to, in the past when they've been at their best, they seem to be able to take on different identities on a week-to-week basis. We've seen the last 4 or 5 weeks now with the Patriots, it's a lot of two-back stuff. It's a lot more two-back stuff than anyone but the 49ers are running in the league right now. It's smash-mouth football. Do you get the sense that they can flip the switch and go back to, you know, whether it be quick strike or downfield stuff off of the two-back stuff? How versatile do you think they are at this point?
You have to assume they're extremely versatile because of who they have at quarterback and what they've done with that approach over the years. Remember last year, they were like this, running the ball a lot. They ran the ball, and I think Brady was under 50% completion rate against the Jets in Week 17, if I recall. And they came into the playoffs, and that's what they were. And when they did throw, they're a vertical offense now. Brandon Cook's over the top. Look at him go. And they spread out against Tennessee in that divisional round and dinked and dunked like it was 2013 or 2014 again. And that was New England all of a sudden. We said, whoa, hey, they can still do that. We have to honor that. We have to assume it. Edelman's there. Gronkowski's there. James White is there. Tom Brady's there. So, yes, they're a run offense right now. And maybe they're playing that way because Brady's a little older. I don't know, but I've learned to just assume that Tom Brady's going to be perfect when you need him to be. He's going to be the Tom Brady when you need him to be.
All right, one more question. This one's near and dear to my heart. This is from @vrets2121 on Twitter here. Any idea who replaces Jim Bob Cooter as offensive coordinator in Detroit? Do you think Matt Patricia hires the best guy or simply his guy? I will take this part of it for a second here, Andy. I really like the Lions coming into the season. I wondered about the defense, and I think the defense has been questionable. I think they've had some encouraging performances late in the year. I did think they'd score points. I thought they'd be able to do a number of different things on offense. They've made this huge, huge investment in the offensive line. I would say if I was going to do a power ranking of the most disappointing units of 2018, the Lions offense would top that for me. And I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I will criticize Jim Bob Cooter on our behalf, or at least on my behalf, and just say I think they've been incredibly underachieving this year. And they've been, outside of Arizona, they've been the worst offense in football since the Golden Tate trade midseason. I have my own thoughts on the Golden Tate trade and why they did it and why you would do that midseason. And none of them are good. But this has been a bad offense, and it shouldn't be. And I guess my question to you, Andy, is, and look, Jim Bob Cooter might be back. He might not. But when you look at it, you've made this huge investment in the offensive line. You traded up to get Kerryon Johnson. I do not understand how LeGarrette Blount played the number of snaps that he did this year. And obviously you have a superstar quarterback in Matthew Stafford. What would you look for in someone to sort of mold this offense properly? Like, what should their identity be?
This is getting very Buffalo Billsian by
it,
you here. You
it
are,
is. I can't get over. Yeah, I can't get. They did, and I can't get over just how bad they've been offensively here. It just it bothers me to no end. And if I'm gonna just throw one more shot in before I hand this over to you, Andy, all those years that they couldn't figure out what to do with Eric Ebron, and they replaced him with three blocking specialists, and wouldn't it have been nice to have Eric Ebron in that offense this year?
Yeah, but remember the price. They would have had to pay a lot for him. So it seems nice now because he's caught some red zone touchdowns. No, he was expensive. He looks better now than he did in spring.
Okay, I'm gonna look it up because he was not prohibitively expensive. The contract he got from the Colts. He's in like the $6 or $7 million range, isn't he?
He is, but I think he had his fifth year option. I look it up. I just remember at the time thinking, well, Ebron, I understand why they'd let him go. And Ebron's been better than we thought with the Colts, by the way. So that's to his credit. But I hear what you're saying.
Two years, $13 million, by the way, for Ebron.
from the Colts, but at the time when the Lions were making the decision, the number was higher on him, and they had to decide, do we give him that number or not? And they decided not. He became a free agent, and then that's the new number that he got. So the rest of the league also agreed with the Lions that he wasn't worth what, I forget what that number was originally. It was a big one. I've been disappointed as well with Detroit. I like Jim Bob Cooter. Let's remember, he's the guy that finally tamed Matthew Stafford a few years ago, and Stafford became the QB that people around the NFL believed he could become. Jim Bob Cooter comes from the Peyton Manning tree. If you can have a tree begin with a player and a quarterback, he's highly endorsed by Manning. I think he's a good young coach, but I do think their offense has been inconsistent this year, and I think some of his designs have been inconsistent. They've had success with the stack releases and motion and some of the highly scheme stuff, and for whatever reason, he hasn't stuck with it on regularly. And right when you think, oh, here we go, they're getting going, they go back to vanilla. They go back to, I'm not quite sure what to describe them as. They never found their identity on offense. And my sense from talking with people around the league is Jim Bob Cooter was never comfortable. And we're talking about him past tense. He's still there. So we need to, he's going to be calling plays in week 17, but it sounds like a foregone conclusion that they'll make a change. I don't know if he was ever comfortable with Matt Patricia, working for Patricia. I mean, Patricia inherited him. Things had gone well with Stafford. I think Patricia felt like he has to keep him, but this has to go really, really well. And it may have just not been the right fit. And if you think about, if I'm a play caller working for a new guy, just an outside hire who's now the Belichick tree, comes from there, he's going to want to have his own guy, I think. I could see how someone would lose their rhythm at trying to find the offensive identity, because you're trying to serve two masters, yourself as the head of the offense and then the head coach, who probably has some different views than you have.
That was very politically put, Andy.
Well, I didn't pick the Lions to go very far, so I don't have to kick them while they're down. Now, if you ask me about Steve Sarkisian, I guess then I'd have to rip into them just like you did. But we're out of time, so I'll have to be nice to these these coaches that stay up till 3 a.m. doing their best to just make these players successful, to make these players rich.
Yeah, I don't take pleasure in calling for anyone's job, and I won't. But I'm just pointing out, boy, they've been disappointing this year.
They do. I think they need to change coordinators here. I think it can be both. I think Jim Bob Cooter is a good coach, and they need to replace him. And Matt Patricia does need to have his own guy. And to answer, what is this, at Verrett's 2121, or maybe he pronounces it 2121, do you think Patricia hires the best guy or simply his guy? Remember, to Matt Patricia, that's always one and the same. His guy is the best guy. And I that'd be interesting. I don't know who his guy would be. I don't know his offensive philosophies.
All right. Well, let's call it a wrap for now. We will be back on Monday morning to break down all the Week 17 action, literally all the Week 17 action, because there's no Monday night game. So we'll have all of it on the Monday show. That's going to be a great show. Thanks to our researchers, Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, who make it sound smart. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Shelby Royston, as well as the guys at Canes 13, who make it sound good every week. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Deep Dive Podcast. You are the best. Like I said, Ann and I will be back in your feed Monday morning, breaking down all the Week 17 Sunday action. I'll be back on Friday joining Jimmy Traina and Scott Grambling on the MMQB Gambling Show. If you go back one in your feed, you'll get Albert Breer. He did a solo show this week, took some mailbag questions. He's got all the big news from around the league on that one. We ask that you subscribe to the MMQB Podcast Network wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, radio.com/10things, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys Monday morning.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.